who you bet
on. Hang on.
How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action to thrill horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo STEVE200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. About a little more than 18 into hour three on the heels of the Hall of Fame announcement. And Seth Merrill, who has spent plenty of time over at the Hall for various functions, including Capital OTB TV handicapping sessions like Derby sessions. Seth, good morning.
Good morning. I was talking to some people just the past few days. We were over there for their Derby party, and I guess that was a nice affair over at the museum the other day. I was, of course, down at the Tower Theater in Albany, which had a great crowd. You, of course, were down in Louisville, which I dodged a bullet, I guess. You were on the ground, so you know. You maybe saw the forecast leading in. I'm sure you did. And from listening to people Wednesday and Thursday that were down there, it sounded like the forecast was saying there's no way anything will be avoided on Friday, and it might linger into Saturday. But boy, the weather turned out to be just great as far as, you know, running Oaks and Derby Day. So dodged a bullet and two great days of racing.
Yeah, the Friday was for all the carrying on, and really, if there's ever going to be an example of just stop worrying about it, especially in that town. There, you don't worry about anything until about 36 hours ahead of time, and even then you're not guaranteed. And so there was never, I mean, there was rain, but it was insignificant, and nothing lost in terms of turf and action, etc. No, it was great. The result certainly has got people kind of agog, and a lot of people just amused and captivated by this too, Seth. I don't know how long the magic can be maintained. We certainly have a long history of closers struggling to repeat when it comes to going to Pimlico, but it was certainly an amazing derby. Nothing else I can say.
I'm 50% curmudgeonly on it, and I'll tell you how. I'm all about stories in horse racing, and have been for a long time. So I am with everybody who is looking at this as a fun story. You know, the jockey gets his first graded stakes win. It's the Kentucky Derby. So there is obviously great stories. But from a handicapping and a betting standpoint, it kind of takes the air out of the balloon in that I always relate the Derby, the Triple Crown, it's our analogy to an actual sports season. I've talked about it before. The two-year-olds are kind of the preseason, and then January and February, or maybe into March, the regular season, March, April, the playoffs, and then we have the championships, you know, Derby, Preakness, and Belmont. And, you know, that many month-long period, we're studying, we're looking at the prep races, and you get to the last 2 weeks, and you're really debating back and forth and reading and hearing what people say about the workouts and yada yada, and then you bet into the race and that happens, and it's like, as they say, as a handicapper and a better, it takes the air out of the balloon a little bit. But again, it was a fun story for the little guys winning and whatnot, and it gives me another chance, which I've talked about for many years on your show. I actually wound up okay because I played a little all others in pool four and pool five, and walked away cashing on the crazy result on a horse that on the day would have been tough for me to bet. So again, I'll tell people to take a look at, you know, the pool five all others paid $39, so it was a decent little play to have a few horses in the gate.
Look at you.
That you didn't have to worry about on the day. So it was a fun betting day, a couple of days. Oh, and I was sitting out in the front part of the race book, just kind of mingling with people and giving out some selections and whatnot. So my computer, I had pulled up some other handicappers just to kind of watch during the day to see how they did, including you. And I will pat you on the back. You had a really nice, on your website, you had a really nice day on Derby Day. Oaks Day for me, I had 7 on top, but it was kind of chalky. Derby Day on top, I want to say maybe 3 or 4, so it wasn't quite as good. But the day itself, I mean, Jack Christopher obligatory double didn't pay a lot, but I had that a number of times. I really liked obligatory, and that was one of the
good
big performances of the weekend. Yeah, I thought she looked
good for
great.
You.
And I was shocked at the price coming out of that Gulfstream race. But then the race that really got me in a good spot, right before the Derby, the Turf Classic, I had those two flip-flops. Stanton and Mira's Mission. I had Mira's Mission on top. So as a public handicapper, I was hoping that one came in and won, but I was perfectly happy with the result. The exact, I want to say, was 170, something like this. So I had played the exact same. And so, yeah, it was a nice day.
That's interesting, because I... Mira Mission I wasn't that interested in. Santin, we've been waiting, you know, we were down in New Orleans and those two New Orleans efforts, so thought he was a little compromised by the 10, but got a great ride, and that was certainly, the 7-1 was very, was a nice reward for sticking with him. You know, it's funny that you say, had from a handicapping standpoint versus a horseplay standpoint, and to ask you as well, you know, your policy on the quote unquote all button, because it's come up, you know, a lot since Saturday. But I, of the 2 days, I made my money on Friday, and with a horse that finished third, Desert Dawn in the Oaks. And
that was a good call by you. Yeah,
I bet her perfectly with the reverse tri-key. I mean, I bet her to win. I back-wheeled her with the major players. I think I had her with 8 others, and then went 5 by 4 above her with those the obvious 4 plus. I think Nostalgic I used as one of the 5 with Echo Zulu and Kathleen O and Secret Oath and Nest, 5 by 4, yeah, with Nostalgic. And so with her, going 5, those 5, 5 by 4 by 1, and that made the whole weekend, actually. I gave a lot of it back on Saturday. But I, as I mentioned, I guess here, on Monday, I both of those plays, Simplification on Saturday and Desert Dawn on Friday, I was very happy with how I approached, you know, the two features, and got, you know, got plenty of run. Simplification, there are runnings of that race, Seth, that he wins.
Yeah, I had called it Epicenter over Pioneer Medina, and that, boy, inexplicably, that was a four ever from that one, but then I had Sandin and Simplification in my top 4. So I had mid stretch, I was counting my exact and triple money until, like everybody else, I said, whoa, wait a minute, who's that coming up the inside? So it was a little bit disappointing there, but as I say, I wound up okay with the future plays. But yeah, I had Simplification in my mix as well. And as we talked last week, you know, we were talking about Johnny D was on just before I was, talking about structuring some tries, and I played around with that a little bit and used Epicenter and Sandin in the top spot and kind of pyramided out underneath. And so as I say, I was a little bit disappointed as it got close to the wire, because mid-stretch it was like, oh, okay, this is going to work out well, and then it went in the other direction. But, you know, overall it was a good day, though. It's the Turf Classic was the one to pull it out there.
The visit... Visit this all button conversation, Seth, and how practical it is, or is it a principle thing, or, you know, I've got I've got so many people, especially given the fact that on either side of the Derby, whether you looked at the last five races of the day or you were looking at the five races that ended with the Derby, and that means pick fours as well, and anything else you want to talk about, the two-day wagers or so forth, the three-year-old $3. There were singles. There were legitimate horses that you could single that then did indeed kind of lend itself to, you know, using all 20. And I haven't done that in ages. I mean, I know I did some exacta back wheels years ago in derbies that I can think of probably, you know, when I was starting out. But I haven't in a long time, and yet there's people who came away with mammoth scores taking that approach. What do you think? Do you just never do it?
Yeah, I think everybody has their own betting styles that they like, and I'm not an all-button guy necessarily. But if we're talking about different kinds of bets and where it would have made sense for me, you mentioned it, the exact. I really did like Epicenter. Epicenter is Andon, but I had Epicenter on top. So I could see maybe doing a Epicenter overall, all over Epicenter in the exact, which, you know, I mean, for any type of better, for a buck, you get away with, you do that, it's $38. So that's playable. But on the pick bet, I had people come up to me over the next couple of days, and just walking around town, people recognize you from TV, and it's amazing how many people had it. But I had people say, oh yeah, you know, I did this and this for their buddy, did this, and then hit the all button. And my response was, they hit the all in a 20 horse field? I mean, it astronomically kicks up the price of your ticket, unless, as you say, you had some amount of confidence in a single or two. But I just, on that kind of day, it seems tough to have that level of confidence. But you know, that people are taking their shots, and I, like I say, everybody has their own kind of betting style, so I could see doing it. For me, it would have made sense maybe in the exact form, not so much in the pick series.
Well, we'll see what Paul. We'll go with Paul Matisse on Friday, and I want Paul to riff on this a little bit too. And I mean, more and more stories are coming out clearly that from people that you know, the one part of this that I mean, I keep reiterating that those that were discussing the potential for a collapse in this Derby, if he had had more time, if Fritz Strike had, you know, been part of the discussions, you know, right from the draw, and even earlier, I think people would have, there would have been more people that would have understood that there was potential for a horse like this that was a late runner to, you know.
Years ago, I used Giacomo, and he was stakes placed in a number of the big stakes out in Southern California. Mind That Bird was a two-year-old stakes winner. So they have something on their resume. This guy, boy, you really had to. I mean, I guess pace-wise, you could have read into it, but, boy, it was tough to come up with that.
I'm not even saying as a win candidate. I'm just saying that if you believe, I mean, with all the conversation that Barbara Road got for that profile, this was not that different a horse. And certainly, you know, certainly from a day-to-day basis of him galloping and working out, you know, we certainly covered him extensively and talked about, you know, not only did we hope that they got in the field, Eric Reed and Sonny Leone and Rick Dawson. But, you know, that he was doing great. It was obvious. I mean, was he going to be good enough for that? I agree. Yeah, you weren't readily saying, if he gets in, I'm betting him heavy to win. I mean, that you're not doing. But you would have at least, he certainly was a Barber Road-esque type of a horse.
Yeah, okay, I'll agree with that. And then if he gets in your conversation, then you can kind
exactly.
of imagine people
exactly.
playing around a little bit. So one of the other funny side stories of it was, you know, you saw on Twitter that official Kentucky Derby t-shirt that
yeah,
doesn't even feature the Kentucky Derby winner. That was hilarious, too. The whole scenario of him getting in because of a scratch, just incredible.
Exactly, well. Seth, I've got to get to Jay today, and for his we got to cover the Hall of Fame and Derby. So I'm going to get to Jay Pribman now, but we will talk to you from Baltimore next week.
Sounds good. I got a pick three bankroll coming up at Capital OTB tomorrow. So if people are OTB customers, jump on and try to get on the bankroll team. And then next week, Preakness Day, I got $1,500 to play on behalf of the bankroll team. So. Preakness Day at the clubhouse race book. Yeah, it should be fun. Gotta see what I can see if I can make the magic happen for the customers.
That's you, the face of GoTB. They love him. He's Seth Merrow, as you heard. They recognize him on the streets of Saratoga. Hey, look, there's Seth Merrow.
I always say my level of celebrity is like three rungs below the local weatherman, but it's something. It's something, right?
Well, you're no Steve Caparizzo.
Exactly. I'm four rungs below Steve. Yeah. I am not the Peck Connection guy, no question.
Although he's no Steve Kornacki.
Well, yes, it's true. Yes.
Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow, too, on your Twitter. And we will close out the morning momentarily with Jay Pribman. And I will literally turn the floor over to Jay and get his Derby recap. And we'll also talk about the two Hall of Fame inductees, Beholder and Teppan. And just it's a mystery. I voted for Kona Gold, and I thought, this was the year. I voted for Blind Luck as well. And I don't know what Kona Gold has to do at this point. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, for a horse to have the protracted career that he did. And, you know, okay, as a gelding at the end, you know, he finished his career with three losses, but all the Breeders' Cup efforts, it's incredible. 14 wins. $3 million. This is a horse that is a Hall of Famer. And I know Jay wants him in as much, thinks, feels he belongs as much as I do. We've been in agreement on a few of these type candidates. We don't understand. The sprinters, particularly, there was a period where it seemed like the hall that was specifically keeping sprinters out of it. But I'll put his PPs up when I get it, as soon as Jay and I are done. It's just mind-boggling. Jay Pribman, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you? Well, here we are again.
Yes, here we are again. I heard you, just as I was connecting with you, it sounded like you were discussing the bane of my Hall of Fame existence regarding Kona Gold. And I said on Twitter, and I'll say it on your show too, I'll put the same offer out there if you're amenable to this. I would love to have a civil discussion with any Hall of Fame voter who did not vote for Kona Gold. I'd love to hear the rationale behind it, and I'd love to be able to reply as to why I believe they should take another look. That's my polite way of putting it, and I'd be polite on your show or on Twitter, but I find it mind-boggling. I mean, look, I'm glad Beholder and Tepin were slam dunks, Beholder especially. I mean, her record is one of the great all-time records. Grade 1 wins 5 straight years, and Breeders' Cup win, multiple Breeders' Cup wins, multiple Eclipse Awards, and that was, you know, certainly deserving, as was Tepin, 2-time champion, and winning Grade 1 races here in Royal Ascot. But I don't get it with Kona Gold. I really don't.
Is it more bias against sprinters? Is it
Steve, you'd have to ask someone who didn't vote for him. I can't answer that. Seriously, I mean, I'm not going to try and guess what somebody else who didn't vote for him is thinking, because to me, it's an obvious selection. So I can't answer what you're starting to ask, because I'm not in that mindset.
12, 13, 14, 15, 16. 16 efforts that received buyers over 110. 16. Including the high of 123 when Artax beat him. I mean, here's my marketing gimmick, Jay. If somebody looked in November this year at a Breeders' Cup PPs for the sprint and saw this, what would their reaction be?
This horse will be 1-5.
Yeah, and this is a Hall of Fame. I mean, how? Listen, I've been screaming about this since the, I think, the first year of eligibility. It's mind-boggling. I don't. I mean, and Beholder and Tepin, there's real nice harmony actually between Tepin and Beholder going in. So that's great. We'll see. We'll see. Any other thoughts on the other humans that Corey Nakatani has got to be? It's got to be very frustrating for Corey Nakatani.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was a very strong ballot. I thought there were very, legitimate candidates on here. I didn't vote for all of them, but I voted for more than half of the 11. And I thought there were, worthy candidates on here, Corey Nakatani certainly being one of them. At the time of his retirement, his record, in terms of, for instance, Breeders' Cup wins, was, among the best ever. And he rode with what, at the time, was the best jockey quality in the country, and more than acquitted himself at the top level against that group. At the time in California, so he would certainly be worthy in my mind, and he received my support as well. I don't know. It's the Kona Gold one that I truly don't get. And I would love either if someone is of a mind who is a Hall of Fame voter and did not vote for him, either here or, if you're amenable to that, or on Twitter, I would love to just hear the rationale, because I think I might be able to point out some things that you might be missing, and hopefully you'd reconsider. A Hall of Fame without Kona Gold is not a Hall of Fame. Just forget. Name a better sprinter over the last 30 years. You can't. Impossible. Anyway, moving on.
All right. We will we'll save this for the next round of Hall of Fame conversation. Jay, let's turn to something else that stunned and amazed.
In a different way.
Yes.
Not quite as obvious.
No. You've seen a lot of derbies. How many like that?
One, maybe. Mind That Bird, yeah. which wasn't which as I wrote in my race recap, he was only a quaint 50 to 1 as opposed to this 80 to 1. And you know, had Calvin Burrell. So this to me, you know, this is, it's like the Spinal Tap. If Mind That Bird was a 10, this was 11, you know, one louder. So that would be my way of looking. Of the 39 derbies I've covered, it was the most surprising result, for sure. It has now usurped Mind That Bird.
Agreed. Talk about its orchestration and, you know, what there is to be gleaned.
Orchestration? I don't understand your question.
Well, the way in which, obviously we got a pace, we got a lightning pace that opened the door for late runnings, late runners, and then we had a ride of rub your eye astoundment when it came to Sonny Leone. Some decisions by more veteran riders to go wide, that kind of orchestration.
So you asked me to talk about how the way the race unfolded.
That too. Yeah.
Oh, okay. it was a ridiculous pace. You'll never be able to make me understand the strategy that the Crown Pride connections used. I don't understand why he was up there pressing a pace like that. It's certainly not something that anybody, I think, would have envisioned beforehand. Obviously, Summer Is Tomorrow was the logical horse to be setting the pace, not necessarily that fast, but certainly fast. But he's a sprinter. Before the UAE Derby, all his races had been at 7/8 or shorter. That's who he is. I don't know why Crown Pride was up there, and they went extremely fast early. And you're right. I mean, Sonny Leone made every right move. He was able to follow Taba on the far turn, far enough to where he finally got clearance and then could duck down inside and save ground from between the 5/16 and the quarter pole. And through the lane, he only had to come around one horse, that being Messier, before continuing his inside run. So, and even the first 200 yards out of the gate, he just angled over and saved ground from that outside box that he drew. So, I mean, he did everything right, but you know, still on form, it's a hard result to envision prior to the running of the race. As for why trips, I mean, some of them I think were just a function of too many horses with the same style all wanting to be in the same spot. That's what befell Y to Barrio. He just couldn't get over because that's the thing. Everybody. You see all these people saying, like, oh, we want to sit, you know, fourth, fifth, or sixth early on. Well, you know, so do about eight others. You all can't be right there in the perfect spot. And he was the one who took the worst of it, I thought, from that strategic standpoint. He just couldn't get over. I don't know that it was the fault of anyone. It was just circumstances of a outside draw and too many horses inside of them who had the same style. That's what befell him. I thought Epicenter got a great ride from Rosario because he figured to be close to the pace, and went as fast as it did early, he got out of it and was farther back than I think he would have thought in terms of position, but in terms of pace, he was where he needed to be. He was a really smart ride on Epicenter, and Pratt rode a fine race on Zandon. He basically just followed Epicenter all the way around the far turn, and then tipped outside of him, and he had dead aim on Epicenter, and just couldn't get by him. So I thought overall for a 20 horse field, it was a fairly cleanly run race. So that was heartening. I think you get that a lot of times when the pace is that quick because the horses spread out. There were just a few horses, Vita Barrio, as we mentioned a moment ago, who just ended up in the same spot. He took the worst of it.
I'm looking forward. You haven't done the chart recap yet, have you?
I don't do a chart recap on the Derby, Steve. Never have and never will.
I just
do the preps.
Gotcha. So really your overall recap tells the story then. The portion of this that needs to be included is Wayne Lucas's. I know Lucas, mirthfully mentioned that he deserves an agent share somehow, but it is noteworthy that he could have waited and seen how Ethereal Road was Saturday morning to scratch, and so for him to pull out to allow the 21st horse in is a bit of a sidebar here.
Potentially so. I mean, there's also the horse, even he admitted, had not looked all that great the previous couple of days, and so there might have been a suggestion that it would be better for him to be proactive regarding the scratch.
Well, and it's funny because Marty had said to me that he had gotten the text from Eric Reed that it's not happening, and then literally minutes later it did happen. Jay, talk a little bit about this portion of it, the connections, and a well-known kind of hard boot operator and smallish owner, had a nice visit with Rick Dawson yesterday and Leon, and now they're, I don't want to say under the microscope, but they're in the spotlight.
Definitely in the spotlight, as you mentioned. All have been in the game a while, Eric Reed especially. He had one previous graded stakes winner, which is one more than Sonny Leon had ever ridden before Saturday, so it was certainly the defining moment for their careers by far. It's not obviously it'd be for anyone, but they're not people who are in these positions every weekend and running in grade one races and with large operations, and the fact that he was claimed for just $30,000 adds a whole nother layer to it. I mean, literally anybody could have claimed that horse for that amount of money back when Eric Reed did, and they were the only one who was even in for the horse that day. So it's quite the remarkable story.
The next chapter, as we begin to look toward Baltimore.
Yes, the Preakness is the second leg of the Triple Crown, and at the moment we've got 11 by our daily racing form count headed towards the race, and we'll see if they all stay in of the 11 that we've got at the moment. We'll see if Zandon, for instance, stays in. I'd say he's the most tenuous of the ones that we've got on our list right now, along with Shake 'Em Loose, so I think he'll end up going in the Murphy. But Marty McGee's got a story that'll be coming out later on Keith Fustel, the winemaker at Pimlico, evaluating how he thinks he'll lay the morning line. Don't forget, the race is being drawn earlier than it has been in the past. The draw is Monday. It used to always be on Wednesday, but it's Monday this year. They're drawing the whole Preakness card. And in fact, they're drawing the whole Friday Black Eyed Susan card on Sunday. So we'll get an early start on both those cards and an early draw compared to years past of the Preakness, which will be, I think, beneficial for everybody.
Very much.
Fustel said that, he'll probably have Rich Strike as, fourth or fifth choice behind Epicenter and Zandon if he goes, and Secret Oath, for instance, if she goes. It's a pretty interesting story, and that'll be on our website a little bit later, if not already. I know he's already filed it. I saw it in our inbox.
Excellent. Well, and we'll be start coverage on Monday from Baltimore. Jay, we got about 5 minutes. Let's get the other portions of the weekend, and with the reference to Lucas, you've covered him as long as anybody. Quite amazing that here, what I guess Oxbow, one of the last. The last classic, anyway. It's amazing that Lucas adds yet another, I called it a coda the other day, to his amazing career.
Yeah, no, it was a terrific performance by Secret Oath. He handled her perfectly between the Arkansas Derby. They took their shot that day. As you remember, I wrote before the Arkansas Derby that they still intended to go to the Kentucky Oaks, most likely, regardless of result, and certainly once that race was run, it was a function of running in the Arkansas Derby of Curse, which was twice as much as the Fantasy, and Grade. It was a Grade One as opposed to a Grade Three. That's why they took their shot there. And he had the 5 weeks, which we wrote about back then too. It made a big difference to run because that race was moved to 5 weeks out from its original, from its old placement of 3 weeks out from the Derby. He had 2 more weeks to get her ready, and he trained her lightly for the most part, and she was fresh and fired big time on Friday. And the thing that I find interesting about Wayne, and you're right, I mean, I've covered him literally since I first started doing this, because one of the very first races I covered, even before I was full-time, was the Santa Anita Derby that he won with Codex, who wasn't even nominated in the Kentucky Derby. I was still in college working part-time at a paper in L.A., so, I mean, I've been around him for 40 years, and the passion that he still has to go to work every day has never wavered, and that's, to me, what's amazing and what keeps him going at 87 now. And it's also interesting to me, Steve, I mean, he was an extremely controversial and divisive figure in the 80s and 90s, and it's been fascinating to watch his perception now as sort of like the kindly old uncle that he's become. And I think it's a reflection of not only how he's changed, but I think how people change and take a wider view. And it's just been a really interesting thing to watch develop over these literally decades.
That's a glad you put that in that frame. I mean, I agree. I don't know what else. I'm not gonna delve into it. But that was actually Saturday morning and during parts of Saturday that actually was kind of being discussed in certain circles that portion of it, how amazing it is. And Secret Oath, to the Preakness possibility here, and it sure feels like they'll do it. I think, I mean, is that, do you think, Jay, from that standpoint, do you think he's more likely
to
not
drawn? I think if she's bounced back well, they're going to go there. I mean, they're not going to run in the black eyes suit. They want now are Grade One. So if she's bounced back well and she's ready to go, I think they will do it. If it turns out she needs more time, then I think they would look at something like either the Acorn or the Mother Goose. But she's running in Grade One races. It's not like they're looking at the black-eyed Susan instead or something like that.
Yeah.
That's not the option here.
Well, we will we'll await that portion of it. The Oaks. Much like Derby, some of the Oaks participants, Steve Asmussen yesterday, they'll turn back Echo Zulu, and I imagine Suge will go on a similar path with Cafelino, and Nest seems like she's a two-turner, and will continue in that pursuit. Any of the undercard action? Obviously, Jackie's Warrior, 3 weeks after his seasonal debut. Jack Christopher, Jay, opine on his future.
Yeah, I think he's a terrific horse, and I would think they'd go in the Woody Stevens and the Haskell. I don't know that he's going to be a Travers mile and a quarter type horse, but I think anything up to a mile and an eighth is you know, between 7/8 to a mile and an eighth is kind of going to be his sweet spot, and that one turn mile was right up his alley. I also see, you know, Olympiad is a really, really good horse, and he's just so blossomed since going two turns, and it was fun to watch him in action again, especially seeing the aggressive move that was made by Ortiz to try and get the jump on him. It still didn't matter for Olympiad winning. And I think the other hopeful revelation of the entirety of the racing world was watching the skill set of Flavian Pratt all weekend, not only on the dirt and some of the great rides he put up for the most part, but you know, he completely understood what was going on with that grass course and rode it to perfection in a number of races, and you really saw the difference between a rider like him who had done his homework and others who hadn't and were diving down to the rail instead of angling to the crown of the course, because it was unquestionable where you needed to be on that course. And you saw how spread out the result was. I've not seen a grass course where the horses are that spread out, and it was completely a function of where you were, and he understood that better than anybody.
It's going to be interesting to see how how the course continues to play, the new turf course, because it was, it discussed that yesterday with Andy Serling too, and actually I brought it up with Brendan Walsh on Monday, so it's a story to follow. Well, the story to follow, of course, is the trip to Charm City. Jay Pribman, thank you. Thanks for everything.
See you next week, Steve, and as we say, I hope them with us.
Hi-ho, there it is, our first hi-ho, and it comes from Jay. I love it. And Thoroughbred LA, I'm certainly going to be worth tuning in this weekend with Jay. We're going to pull up and send you out into the race day, and that includes the action at Horseshoe Indianapolis. Thanks to John Dooley for catching us up. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. We did Hong Kong with Dick Powell. The Hall of Fame announcement, again, Teppan and Beholder, congratulations to them and all their fans and connections. Seth Merrow as well and Jay Pribman. Thanks, everybody. Replay, and I think we'll have the Monday show will be up on the archive and pods today as well. Talk to you tomorrow at the races.
Are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Teppan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
Horsefin, nominate now for the $400,000 Grade II Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks. Both races will be run Friday, June 3rd, each at 1 mile on the grass at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Nominations close Wednesday, May 18th. Contact the Penn National Racing Office at 1-800-233-8238. That's 1-800-233-8238.